Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. Was when my mom said, again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my MP right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training, and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina. Banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick's Hill. For fish scales, the cops love. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to a appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crib and blood in one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Nugget the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see today.
Jackson!
Damn, it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Revolutionary Grizz. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Umani Hill, Jair Shakir. Now, Georgia University, our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African and black prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the prison mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, producing new African citizens. Before I bring on the guest tonight, I'll let you share a couple of events that happened in history during this month. On May the 24th, 1854, Lincoln University was founded. Also on May the 24th, 1854, Anthony Burns, a celebrated fugitive slave arrested by United States Deputy Marshal in Boston, when on June the 2nd he was returned to slavery, it required 2,000 United States troops to control the protesting crowd. Also on May the 24th, 1861, Major General Benjamin F. Butler declared slaves contraband of war. Also on May 24, 1871, President Grant issued a proclamation against the Ku Klux Klan terrorism in South Carolina. Also on May 24, 1954, Dr. Peter Murray Marshall installed the president of New York County Medical Society and became the first black to head an American Medical Association unit. On May 25, 1919, Madam C.J. Walker, wealthy hair care manufacturer, died in Irvington, Hudson, New York, at the age of 52. Also, May 25, 1943, a riot in Mobile, Alabama, shipyard over the upgrading of 12 black workers. Also, May 25, 1963, independent African state established Organization of African Unity, OAU, and declared African Freedom Day. Which was known as African Liberation Day as well. Okay, on May 26, 1943, President Edward Barclay of Liberia, the first African president to pay an official visit to an American president, arrived at the White House. Also on May 26, 1959, Prince Edward County, Virginia closed the public school to avoid desegregation. Schools remained closed for 5 years. Also on May 26, 1961, Freedom Ride Coordinating Committee established in Atlanta. Also on May 26, 1966, the former colony of British Guiana became Guyana, an independent nation in the British Commonwealth. On today, May 27, 1863, an ELKC assault on Port Hudson, Louisiana, two Louisiana regiments, 1st and 3rd Native Guards, made 6 gallant but unsuccessful charges on rebel fortifications. The black captain, Andrew Kalu, was heroes of the day. On today's date, in 1958, Ernest Green graduated from Little Rock Central High School with 600 white classmates. Also today's date, in 1975, Izzard Charles, former heavyweight boxing champion, died in Chicago at the age of 53. On May 28, 1830, President Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act requiring resettlement of all Indians in the West. Also on May 28, 1851, Sojourner Truth addresses Women's Rights Convention. Also on May 28, 1962, a suit alleging de facto school segregation in Rochester, New York by NAACP. Also on May 28, 1997, John H. Steinstock, publisher of the Chicago Defender, the nation's only daily black newspaper, died in Chicago at the age of 84. On May 29, 1944, Maurice Bishop, leader of the Grenada Revolution, was born. Also on May 29, 1973, Thomas Bradley elected mayor of Los Angeles. On May 30, 1822, House slaves betrayed Denmark Visa conspiracy, one of the most elaborate slave plots on record. Thousands of African Americans from Charleston, South Carolina, and the vicinity were involved in conspiracy. 37 blacks were hanged. Also on May 30, 1854, Kansas-Nebraska Act repealed Missouri Compromise and opened Northern Territory to slavery, giving settlers the right to decide whether they wanted slavery or not. The immediate results were a state of virtual war between pro-slavery, anti-slave activists in Kansas, and the intensification of the anti-slavery struggle. Also on May 30, 1956, a bus boycott began in Tallahassee, Florida. Also on May 30, 1967, Nigeria Eastern Region seceded and assumed the name of Biafra, triggering a civil war that raged for 31 months. You know, it's a lot of things happening in the history, but the show must go on. I want to salute all those who are, here for land independence. I want to show a shout out to all those who are currently educating themselves and doing conscious things and doing positive things in the community and the environment. Now, I want to send a shout out to all the our listeners that have been following us in 2014. I want to send a shout out to all the students at UD at Georgia University who've been currently applying themselves behind the enemy walls and the prison system, as well as educating the mind and mass of the people on the streets. I like what all to do. I'll let it bring us to, welcome to the show tonight. Brother Nate Williams, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I hear you, bro. I hear you, brother. Yes, I hear you. I hear you, bro.
Okay. Yeah, I'm doing good.
Yeah,
how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well, bro. I'm doing well, man. You know, we had a little technical difficulty, man, but we on, man. You know.
Yeah.
We on, brother.
Yeah.
I'm doing well.
I'm in traffic myself, so it worked out. It worked out for the best, you know.
True indeed, man. Before we start, man, can you tell little people a little bit about yourself before we jump into this?
Okay. Yeah. My name is Nate Williams. I'm one of the first juveniles in the state of California that was tried as an adult. They sentenced me to 25 years to life when I was only 17 years old. And the psych and psychiatrist back then was saying it was wrong. Fast forward today, I'm evidence-based. They didn't expect me to live, survive, but I did. So as soon as I got out, they kicked me, and we actually changed laws to where kids are not even sentenced how they were sentenced in the late 70s and early 80s. You know, I'm a success story. Michelle Alexander, she wrote the book called New Jim Crow. She's leading this mass incarceration, and she's the one that helped me come home. You know, she heard my story, not the case I was in prison for, but before that, when I was a kid, I was arrested for something I didn't do. And it's a difference when you're arrested for a crime you did and when you're arrested for a crime you didn't do. So when I was arrested for a crime I didn't do, you know, I didn't snitch, I didn't tell who did what was. I wrote it, but I was bitter because, you know, the system left over me. My homeboy didn't come write his own case. So I became bitter and just went in a whole different direction of where I was. And then I'm just now recovering back from that journey. But, you know, it's all success. It's all love, success, and giving back and trying to help my community not go through what I went through. It's about the younger generation than me, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting how the system incarcerate our youth and throw away the kids and how they criminalize us. You know, that's an interesting idea. That's an interesting point when you look at certain things from this perspective, right? Especially in regards to mass incarceration, because it's a big business which a lot of people perceive. Economic benefit from a lot of people receive resources from, you know, especially from the prison labor, and some states the free prison labor, the free work, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that people, that many companies invest into it because it's modern day slavery according to the 13th Amendment, man. It's very corrupt. It's very corrupt, but it benefits, you know what I'm saying, the so called elite in regard to certain things that people don't understand, you know, the condition that people face. Being incarcerated, being treated like animals, being dehumanized, you know, and other things like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit about how it was to be a juvenile and an adult system, how it actually was, and, you know, just some of the things you had to endure and go through while in the system, just some of your experiences, so to speak, so people can get an understanding.
Okay, so going in the system as a kid, as a youth, if you're not, I was part of a gang when I went there, so a lot of things that happened to other people that wasn't a part of gangs, I witnessed it. Even the ones that was, like I remember being in San Quentin, and they were sending a lot of us up there, youth. and I remember becoming a gang leader, and I remember people was coming to me telling me, like, look, Nate, I'm not a gangster, right? And I was telling these individuals, like, look, don't say that too loud, because if somebody else hear you, you know, they're going to punk you or whatever. And not knowing that this person was reaching out for help, right? I didn't understand it then because my mind frame was, like, was different. But now I think about, well, what should I have told that guy to go lock up or save his life or go somewhere? I didn't know at that time. But two individuals that came to me like that, you know, one wound up hanging himself, killing himself. The other one just, you know, went in debt. And he just wanted to die. And they were all reaching out for help. You know, once they went in the system, you know, you don't have no guns in prison. It's a different world. And they couldn't deal with it. And then for me, it was like I went to San Quentin, and it was brothers there, like Dadisi. That's my folks. Like, he was there, like, in the late 70s. And I knew him from the streets. So when I got there, he really laced me on a lot of the struggles and what was really going on in prison. Being from a blood gang, we were closely associated with, like, Kumi 415's family, like the brothers up north. The other brothers, the Crips, they, like, there was so many Crips where they were, like, to themselves, unless, you know, riot broke off or whatever. But yeah, for me, it was kind of trial and error learning, but I had the fear of I didn't want nobody to ever stab me, so I went in there thinking, oh, God, I gotta put this mask on. People look at me, I gotta take off, whatever. And that's how I basically lived my life in there. And I remember going to the hole in San Quentin, and I was in the hole, and brothers inside the hole were teaching me, you know, because it was a war zone back then, you know, as far as races, not with our own people, but other races. So these brothers was teaching us how to make knives, how to make all kind of stuff. And some of these things I was making, I was getting caught. And I remember getting so much shoe time in San Quentin where they put me in a investment center where Brother George was at. I was actually in his cell at one time, and I was on a tier that he was on for many years. And I remember there was a hole in the wall. That hole might be still in that wall. And I remember asking this officer, why is there a hole in the wall down there? He was explaining to me that was when George had shot, inside. He shot and killed the sergeant or somebody on that tier. And from there, I was going to classification hearings, and I didn't really care. I didn't ever think I was going home because I went with 25 years to life at 17 years old. When I got to San Quentin, got DC and all these other brothers, they had 7 life sentences, and they had been down like 15, 20 years already. So here I come with 25 years of life. These brothers been down 20 and 15 on a 7 of life. I didn't ever think I was going home. And so I remember I was in AC, and the program administrator, he was an old man. He looked at me. He said, you're still a young man, because I went in at 17. He said, you can get out of here young. Why are you listening to these older convicts? And I'm like, I'm listening to them. He's like, look at me. I looked at him, he was old. And then he said, look at your counselor. I looked at my counselor, he was kind of young, middle-aged. He said, who do you want to look like when you get out of prison, me or him? I pointed to the young guy. And then he said, well, what I need you to do is find out what from the AC unit, you can see the main line walking, going to church and working, whatever. He said, you see those guys out there on the main line? I said, yeah. He said, you need to find out what they are doing and what you're not doing, because those guys are out there programming, you know, and it went in one ear and out the other. But, you know, it stuck with me, and as time went on, I was able to transfer to a lesser custody prison, and I was able to get in school and vocational trades. You know, it was a lot. It was a lot that I went through to really keep my mind fresh, because a lot of people go inside and they give up mentally, and some even physically. But I had a lot of strong brothers that laced me. Like I said, Dadisi was one of that laid the foundation when I first came in the system, to where I was able to help other people like me, you know, navigate through the system without, you know, getting crossed up or, you know, giving a second chance. Like a lot of people that had a chance to go in and out of prison, I remember one time I was telling them like, give me a $20 list. You don't have to go. You don't have to worry about working. Just go to school. Get a vocational trade, because I seen the pattern of people going in and out so many years, and I wished I could have got a parole date, but I was a lifer, and they wasn't giving lifers dates back then. But I remember I was sending a lot of my folks to vocational trade, telling them, get the trade, get you a job when you get out. Leave the dope alone, because all of them were going on with that $300 check, whatever they gave them, and they all had plans. They all had criminal plans, and every one of them either came back sooner or later, or even death, you know. So I've seen the benefits of sending, you know, the youngsters to school to get something when they go out, you know. And I started an organization in Tracy called the African American Youth Committee. And originally it was set up that I was only trying to bring in my little relative. She was a rapper in the early 90s. But the warden said he wouldn't allow her to come in unless I had some type of educational piece. So I said, well, what about Juneteenth and Black History Month? He said, yeah. So he allowed me to run those events, those cultural events. And those cultural events wound up allowing me to invite more people, like Dorsey Nunn, All of Us Are Nunn, Mount Alejandra, Barrios Unidos. It was so many organizations that was coming inside, helping us, educating, you know, the population. I had entertainers. Monte Alejandro was in Vietnam with Harry Belafonte, and he invited Harry Belafonte. And Harry Belafonte was an activist and used to be Dr. King, Martin Luther King, back in the day. So when he came, he brought all these other activists like Danny Glover and all these civil rights attorneys, and it just got bigger and bigger and took on a whole it took on a whole machine by itself. And I remember the late Dr. Vincent Harding, he wrote a lot of Martin Luther King speeches. And he came to our event and said he wanted to get me home. I said, how? He said, Michelle Alexander can help you come home. And I didn't even know who she was at that time. And he said, give me your name and number and I'll give it to her. She's coming to my organization in Denver, and we're going to do a fundraiser, and I'll rent a bar. So I said, okay, well, here's a bio. I gave her a bio about my life, and the guests that came in, Tracy, the brothers would make, like, hobby, like, drink boxes, chess boards, the kitchen frames, and we would give them, the guests, a gift, because we didn't have no money, but we gave them a gift to show appreciation for them coming in, educating, and entertaining the population. And I gave her a jewelry box and my bio. And she wrote me that same week, well, the following week, and she said, not the case that I was in prison for, but the case that I didn't do when I was a kid, reminded her of the case when she was working for the ACLU, the director, and the reason why she quit was because of this brother came to her. And he wasn't doing nothing. Somebody was trying to set him up, but they never could catch him with nothing. And he went to her, and she said, first of all, brother, have you ever been convicted of a felony? He said, yeah, but this has nothing to do with that. This is separate. She said, I'm sorry, but our policy is if you ever was convicted of any felony, they couldn't help you. That was the ACLU. I don't know if it's still like that. They probably changed it. But she said, a few weeks after, the same name that this brother out of San Francisco, the detective that she gave to him, he was alleged of setting up like 800 people. He was convicted. And she said it broke her heart. That was a real reason why she quit the ACLU, and she started doing the work she's doing now. And she said my case reminded her of him. She couldn't help him or find him. She still can't even today. But she was going to do everything she could to get me home. And here I am on your show, brother, speaking. And I had a choice to go back to L.A., Compton, where I'm from. I was raised in Compton, California. Or to go to Oakland. My daughter is 27 years old. Her mother is from Oakland. And she was conceived while I was in prison. Well, we had her through the family business. So I paroled to my daughter, and that was Northern California, Berkeley, to be closer to my daughter and to be a father to her. And it was the best choice I ever made in my life, because she seen me come from nothing to being in a reentry, to being, even when I've been out, I've been racially profiled by police, and I've actually beat the the case, but I couldn't beat the racial profile because it's very hard to really prove racial profile until they kill him, right? And I lost a case behind that. But, yeah, my success has been behind Michelle Alexander. I was in San Francisco State trying to get my bachelor's degree because I couldn't get a job. While I was going there, California Institute of Integral Studies, I want to tell all the brothers, if you're out there trying to get your bachelor's degree and you really want to expedite and get it fast, you can go to California Institute of Integral Studies. It's called CIIS on Mrs. Street in San Francisco. You can get your bachelor's degree there in 1 year. I created a scholarship for somebody coming out of prison to where they'll give you $10,000, right? This hippie school came to San Francisco State and asked me, would I mind inviting Michelle Alexander to their school, a private school, to help do a fundraiser to raise money for people like us coming out of prison? I said, sure. So I did. It was somewhere on Van Ness. It was an auditorium. It was like 5,000 people in there. The school introduced me. I introduced Michelle Alexander. When I came off that stage, I should have asked for $30,000 because that's what my education cost is. $30,000, but they gave me $10,000. They said, Nate, thank you for inviting us to out here. We made so much money, we're willing to give you $10,000 if you leave San Francisco State and come to our school, and you can get your bachelor's degree here in 1 year because we run an accelerated program. What that means, they go to school like Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. Fridays, you go to school from like 4 o'clock till 9 o'clock at night. Saturdays, from 9 in the morning till 9 at night. Sundays from 9 in the morning till 9 at night. So you're going to school more than just a regular college. I got my bachelor's degree in 1 year. And then I went to Stanford Business School as well and graduated from there. And that's where I started my nonprofit. I had so much now. I started my nonprofit called Choices for Freedom. And my mission statement is to deter kids from entering the justice system. If they do, I'm in 3 juvenile halls. One in Northern California, one in Southern California, and I'm in 16 different prisons. I have a contract with, which is High Desert. It was a black warden, used to be at Soledad back maybe 10 years ago. One of the racist prisons in California used to be High Desert, Susanville. They sent one spearman from Soledad a few years back there to change the culture. He changed it. All the racist officers that was there moved over to the fire camp or they even quit. And he took over. And I volunteered there. And I met with Spearman. I talked to Spearman. And when the opening came open for contracts, that brother spoke up for me. Somebody formerly incarcerated. I might be one of the first formerly incarcerated to receive an actual contract to go back inside. I mean, ARC, Anti-Racism Coalition, and all these other organizations do have contracts to go in, but they were not started by nobody like us. You know, they were started by free people. So my contract was for 3 years, and 3 years to become permanent. And I actually created systemic changes because, and it didn't dawn on me until I was inside a High Desert and I was checking out some keys. Because when I go inside, the doors are all kind of stuff. So when I checked out these keys, y'all know the police keys, they like skeletons. I'm like, it didn't dawn on me until one of the brothers asked me to open the door to use the restroom. When I grabbed the key, I looked at the key and my heart started like beating a little fast. I looked at him, he's like, bruh. He's like, you thinking what I'm thinking? Yeah. I said, how can I be? I was right here a year ago, right here. I'm opening the door for you, but I open it up. Not only that, the staff there. The IST officers that the IST staff trains the other officers and all type of stuff. They asked me to come speak to their class. I'm like, you want me to come speak to your class? He's like, yeah. So I went and spoke. And I said, first of all, I need you to do two things. I need you to show your whole class, all officers. I need you to show them the documentary that was did at Stanford. I forgot the name of it, but it was a research did that the students at Stanford did on the relationships of inmates and staff. It was no police. They were all college students. It got so violent that they had to shut the film down. So I said, show that documentary and something else I told them. And while I was walking over to come talk to him, I was walking, and it was four officers walking on the side. I'm walking. They all in police uniform, and it was one of them had on, like, plain clothes. He had a burgundy shirt on with some gray slacks. And I'm just listening to him just walking, and they were joking each other. One of them said, they all was white. One of them said, hey, he was talking to the guy with the burgundy shirt on. He said, hey, that's a nice burgundy shirt you got on. Where'd you get it from? Warden Spearman's yard sale? You know, Warden Spearman is a brother. And I thought the other officers was going to chime in and say racist stuff, but they all got quiet. They didn't say nothing. And I was going to use that when I went in there and talked, but I couldn't use it. So when I went in there, he was showing all these PowerPoints and things, and he showed the movie, and then he brought me up to speak. And I told him what I just told y'all, and I said I thought the other officers was going to say something for me to come in here and really tell y'all what he's teaching. And one of the slides he put up, it said, do not entertain negativity. So that was the only thing I could use. So I said, I'm going to use this. So I said, this what he has up here, do not entertain negativity, meaning that those officers, when that one officer made that statement about Warden Spearman, did you get that from Warden Spearman yard sale? That's what he's teaching, not for y'all to engage in other people's negativity. You know, that officer threw out some negativity, and they had a choice whether to respond or not. They didn't. So what Spearman done there has really created a sense of change in what I have done. And for us, the classes, when they put the R, it used to say California Department of Corrections. Now it says California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. That rehabilitation has been on there for 15 years. And California paid a lot of money to put that R on everything. It didn't mean nothing 15 years ago. Today, it means something. It means rehabilitation programs. They have to be a part of rehabilitation programs from headquarters on down. And the officers can't do it. So they really need us now. So I'm thinking that's why they let a lot of us go back inside, because they even gave me a statewide. I don't just have a brown card. I have a statewide clearance. And how I got this statewide clearance is if you're in more than 10 prisons, you qualify. So I'm in 16 prisons. Every year, I was filling out all these paperwork just to be approved for 1 year in 16 different prisons. So I got tired of filling out these papers. The resource man, can you just streamline it to where all y'all could just know I just fill out the same paperwork every year? And then they said, well, if you're in more prisons, you can fill out for a statewide. I said, what is that? And I put in for it. Usually, if you get your state, if you're approved within 30 days, it took almost 6 months for them to issue me a statewide. And I could just imagine they were going crazy in headquarters trying to figure out who's going to give him a statewide clearance. And they eventually gave it to me. And like I said, it's like I'm living a dream. Like I go inside and I'm able to come back out. And it's just this thing, bro. And
Okay. I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
What do you say, brother? I want to ask you a question about what you were saying. Again, you had mentioned a brother named Didisi, right?
Yeah, that's my.
Can you tell a little about brother Didisi and how did his educational upliftment, education, awareness, how does his mentoring to you fit your development?
Okay, so first of all, I couldn't really read and write when I went to prison. Right, I wasn't even going to school, so I got caught up in a situation that I was a blood, right, and I got caught up over this car, over this low rider. I wound up catching the case, 25 years alive. I went to prison, but when I was a kid, Didisi used to come through. I always looked up to him, and even though it was in a negative light, I still looked up to that brother, right, and that brother. And when I called my case, I went away for a long time, and I met up with him. But he was talking a different language. He was talking about, instead of red, he was talking about red, black, and green. Instead of just the hood, he was talking about unity. He was talking about a lot of things that I didn't understand. He started giving me books. He started telling me about Africa, the struggle. It was a lot of things that he told me that, you know, it really helped me navigate through the prison and become a person inside that was able to go anywhere, where anywhere in the system and be respected, but also have knowledge about our culture and to stop the madness and genocide what me and him was doing in our past lives. So it corrected me to really focus on who my real enemies were, on what really mattered, family, people. It was a lot of things, brother, that brother really instilled in me, that really made me become the person I am and leave that foolishness off. And I remember some people that he introduced me to. I transferred from San Quentin to Hatchby, then I went back to San Quentin, then I went to Vacaville, then I went to Tracy. When I got to Tracy in the early 90s, I got there. It was all Crips there, and I was a blood. And I remember coming through the orientation, and one of the brothers he introduced me to was there, Miles Brown. And the Crips wanted to rap at me, just jump on me. Miles Brown said, look, nah, this ain't finna happen. He will take a fade head up with any of y'all. We put noose on him, right? Because this ain't right. We know this brother from San Quentin. You know, he wasn't about this, what you think is past. So they put oos on me, and then eventually about 15 of us came, and we was able to stand up on our own. And I'm very grateful for the rest in peace, Michael Brown, for that brother doing that. And I got a brother, right, he's sleeping out here in the car. He was rocking with me, big boy. But, yeah, what that brother did, like I said, it helped me to navigate. And he came home last Friday, and it felt good for me to be able to be out here and do what I said I was going to do, start my organization, and then go back inside and help brothers come home. I didn't think I was going to get DC out that easy. I thought it was going to be a commutation hearing. But I wrote a letter, a support letter. And the board knows me because I write so many letters, right? And they granted him a parole date, and he's out here, bro. And it's now I'm teaching him, you know. And it's funny, like he's like a little kid that, you know, it's like everything is like new to him and starting all over. But yeah, that brother really was a powerful. Him and other brothers that was with him, you know, really helped me to learn how to read, write, exercise, stay in shape. Swahili, learn Swahili. They gave me an Arabic name. It was a lot, brother, that I really enjoyed them brothers that they shared with me, you know. You got any more questions along that you want to ask me?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I want you to tell him about your experience when you had met Hugo Yoga Pinedo.
Oh, okay. I met him when I was in Tehachapi. When I went to Tehachapi, what happened? They were turning San Quentin into a level 2 or 3, whatever. So all of us had to leave. So I remember they put me on a bus. Without even giving me a hearing. And an older brother said, no, that's wrong here. He filed a 602, and I turned it in, and they granted it. When I was only in Tehachapi for 30 days. My 602 was granted. They had to send me back to San Quentin and give me a hearing and then transfer me wherever I want to go. So while I was in Tehachapi, I think I was in 4B. He was in there. He was single cell, and I was next door to him, and we used to talk through the vent a lot. And he was telling me a lot. And he had a lot of Swahili books over there. He gave me a lot of books. And like I said, I had to transfer before I was able to really go to yard, really kick it with him. But, yeah, when he was assassinated, I was one of the ones that was out here in the Bay that wasn't scared to go to his wake, to go to his funeral. And it kind of hurt me, bro, to know that you know, a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people, I understand a lot of people was probably on parole or whatever, but I was too. But I know what he meant to the people. I know what George meant to the people. I know what Dadis, I know what a lot of brothers meant to us, a lot that they did for us, right? So I went to the wake, you know, SSI, FBI, CIA, it was a whole lot of motherfuckers. It was a whole lot of people, police, Mark Hart watching, taking pictures of everybody's laying there, even at the funeral. But yeah, that was my relationship with him, you know, just talking through the vents, him sharing a lot of the books he had with me. And, you know, I read a lot. I know the story. I know all about, you know, what they went through. So I knew. And I just seen his daughter. His daughter was at the funeral, too. His daughter was just at a I'm featured in Sacramento at the state. The city of Sacramento has a library right downtown Sacramento where they took pictures of juveniles that was tried as an adult. They put us all on display in the library. And she came through there to see. And it was, that was like maybe last month. And I was supposed to look back up with her. Yeah, but that was my relationship with him. You know, good brother. Good brother.
Okay. That's a good thing, man. You know, basically what you're saying, a lot of these brothers that had been locked down and catch up for years, they had a lot to do with your education, you know, and building you up to the individual you are today, right? You know, can you tell us, you know what I'm saying, in regards to education, how important is it to give back and educate the mind and mass of the people incarcerated, you know what I'm saying, to engage into the lives of people that are affected by mass incarceration. How important is that?
Oh, it's very important because, like, for me, for me, you know, my father left me when I was 8 years old. He and my mom divorced, but I didn't understand it at 8 years old. I thought he didn't love me either, so I personalized it. I didn't want to be like him, but I joined the game because nobody was there to educate me. Had somebody been there to educate me, maybe I wouldn't have been a gang member. And it's very important. A smart person can understand that joining a gang or doing negative things is going to get you, you know, either killed in a negative light. I have friends that I grew up with that was very smart that used to tell me, but I didn't want to listen to them because they were my age and they were like punks, but not punks, they were like squares. But education plays a big part, and this is what I teach kids in juvenile hall, is that they always ask me to, you know, share a game with them. I share a game. They said, "What's a game?" I said, "Game is a job." They be like, "What's that, OG?" I said, "Job." They like, "Well, what's the game in it?" I said, "The game is a paycheck every week or every other week, benefits, retirement." And some of them get it, that's smart, some of them don't. But that's my whole plan, is to get a place where I can take these youth. Because I work with kids out of the Bay, and I work with kids out of L.A., and they both are the same. They all learn and are receptive to the knowledge. But when they get out, they say, I say, when you get out, they don't carry no more guns, right? I got to carry my gun, G. Not that I want to do something, but for my own protection, because people are my enemies. And I try to show them that you really don't have no enemies, but they don't understand that. But I was thinking, well, okay, if a kid in San Francisco, if I could take all the kids that get out of YGC, Santa Juvenile Hall, to L.A., and take the kids from L.A. up north, they don't have no enemies, right? But that's not, in a lot of situations, that's not realistic because of financial members. But I've helped shut down, they're gonna shut down two prisons in this year. But I helped shut down also, I helped take probation out of hands of juvenile, out of probation, meaning that these people that work inside juvenile hall, they used to be counselors. They used to be case managers. Somehow, they start picking up mace. They start picking up battalions, and they turned into guards, right? That's not what they was intended to be. So we got them taken up out. They might lose their job. They're going to be closed in juvenile hall as well, and these kids are going to go into different types of programs. So this is a perfect opportunity for them to allow us to take these kids. Let us have some place up in Northern California. Let us have a place in Southern California to bring these kids out of the city that want to change, that want to learn vocational trades, that want to become conscious, that want to live their life. So that's my plan right now, is to get a building or some place, which we're thinking about. They're closing all these juvenile hall fire camps, so they're going to be open. Maybe we could renovate those and turn those into college campus. We don't need them there. We need to tear them down and build something different. I did something with Frank Gehry. Frank Gehry is a famous architect. They asked Frank Gehry, if you was to build a prison, what would the mental, physical, and spiritual aspect be? He said, well, I'm not a prison. I've never been in prison. So he asked me and Susan Burton, two experts, to come speak about what it is to live in prison. And his students designed the prison. They talked to me, asked a lot of questions. And at the end, their completion, all of them made prison. It was about 10 of them. All of these prisons, none of them had bars. None of them had guards. They were not far away. They were built right in the community. They looked like state-of-the-art college campus, right? That's what we need. We don't need no police. We need community-based organizations. We need people from the community. We need psychiatrists. We don't need police. They don't need to be police. They need to be taught. Like what I teach in High Desert, my class is called Path to Restoration. It deals with undealt with trauma. And that's what a lot of us have went through, trauma that wasn't dealt with. We wasn't born with guns and knives in our pocket and a plan to go rob somebody. We were taught that. We weren't put in a condition to do that, right? And I use Maya Angelou. It's a six-week program. I use Maya Angelou because she went through a whole lot of trauma as well. I use my story to show, and then the guys are able to tell their own trauma and to correct their own ways. And that's what I do at High Denver and some of the doing at all. But, yeah, educating these kids is what – that's what I do. And it works. It works, bro, you know. And I got a contract right now to take some of these kids to Alabama where they have the museum out on the lake. Well, some of the things were I have a grant to take some kids there to see that. Now I have another funder want to give me some money, more money, matching. I said, look, I don't even want to go there. I want to go from Alabama to Ghana. I guess it's a no return where they put all the slaves on the ship. So that's where I'm at now. We're gonna go from here to Alabama, to the museum, and then from there to Ghana and back. I'm going to document all this. That's where I'm at with that.
It sounds very positive and promising. You know, I was on your website, and I was looking at your mission statement, right? It says our mission is to offer education, mentoring, and social support to youth and adults to keep all from entering or returning to the criminal justice system so that we can interrupt the cycle of mass incarceration, right? Now, in regards to your mission, can you tell about some of the program that you offered on things to carry out the mission, and how can people get involved in some of these programs?
Oh, okay, yeah. My organization is called choicesforfreedom.org. You can go on my website and see a lot of my activities and stuff I'm doing, or if you see me in the base and volunteer with me. I'm in juvenile halls, always looking for volunteers. Prisons, always looking for volunteers. Path to Restoration is one of my programs that I teach. I have another one that I use this book called Criminal and Addictive Thinking, our curriculums that I use in order to help the youth and adults too. And I network with a lot of people. And right now with the coronavirus, we've been doing stuff like passing out masks. Some places were giving out gift cards to those in need, like Brothers Coming Fresh Out, giving away masks, disinfected. 3,500 people had to be released from prison. We're riding, picking them up, taking them to reentry to home. So a lot of people can volunteer and do that if they want. We're trying to create an art program. We need artists, people that know any whether you know film, whether you know how to write or draw, by coming to help these kids, just volunteering to help them in our program. There's so much. Anybody that volunteers can contact me at churchforfreedom.org. And there's a website you can see.
Okay. I got another question for you, right? I understand you said you work with a lot of youth that might be involved in gangs, right? In regards to reaching them, you know what I'm saying? Tell us some of the positive measures that you use in regard to reach a person that's associated with a gang, that might be in a gang, in regards to, like, say, for instance, right? They selling dope and robbing, you know, and they're not getting the money. What kind of alternative will you offer them to take them out of the criminal mentality, the criminal lifestyle? What kind of alternative do you have to offer them, to present to them, you know, to suddenly catch their attention? Or how do you actually reach them, so to speak?
Yeah. I sit them down and show them numbers like the dope game. You can show them a number where you can make a lot of money in like a week or a day. And then I show them the numbers like over years working, if you get a $25 job over the years, how much money you'll make. And then showing them the risk. Like show them the risk of taking of this dope. There's risk involved there. Of a job, there's no risk. And actually telling my story on you know, what I did, you know, and other brothers too that have, you know, done way more time than me, or take them to the morgue, or take them to San Quentin Squires program or any other program, so other brothers in there can talk to them about, you know, yeah, you see these guys on these rap videos, the game and YG and all these dudes, you know, they got their money, they're doing this. But there's another side, you know, and I live that side. I'm happy to say that I made it out to this side. Everybody is not going to make it. Everybody didn't make it. Nobody's guaranteed to even wake up tomorrow, you know, and it's so what really matters is family. You know, all those years in prison, my homeboys wasn't coming to visit me and looking out for me. It was my mother, my family. And even today, you know, I go and help people in my own neighborhood, and you know, I see so much stuff. Like I'm close to so much gunplay. Like I'm from Compton, right? And there's a barbershop across the street from my homegirls that I grew up. She has a nonprofit too called Serious Angels, and there's a barbershop right across the street. I don't know if y'all remember when this rapper from Compton's name is Slim 400. He got shot up, right, on the west side of Compton. I was in the east side of Compton. He got shot up on the west side. I was on the east side. Whoever was involved came over on the east side. I'm standing on the boulevard with my homegirl, and I'm watching. And he's not him, but the guy that did it went to the barbershop, and he was on his social media with his phone on Instagram live, and them guys seen it and went over there and lit that whole place up, you know. But they hit people; they didn't even have nothing to do with it, you know. And that was wrong. And that's what I try to explain to them. Like even the rules of gangbanging is different. From back in the days, there was rules. You didn't do a lot of stuff that they do nowadays. Or you would get disciplined. They don't have those rules now. It's crazy. But, yeah, educating them on, you know, what is it like? What is it like for a person to get sentenced to a sentence for the rest of their life and never, ever come home, or to come home and, you know, face all these obstacles and not being able to get a house, to get a good job, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things that the youngsters don't see. I mean, temporary, you know, you might have a nice car, have money, but that stuff plays out after a while, you know what I mean? Yeah, those days are gone.
Indeed.
Those days are gone.
Yeah. Indeed. I know you had mentioned earlier about the scholarship program for the incarcerated, right?
Yeah.
You know, can you tell a little bit more about this program for the incarcerated
The program at Stanford is called a Remade program. So they take 6 formerly incarcerated people per year. You have to write an essay, and they handpick who they want in there. But it's a 16-week program. At the end of 16 weeks, you'll have a professor of business plan, and they'll give you, I think they gave me $500 to start to go towards, you know, whether you're a business license or whatever. And you meet millionaires and billionaires that come share their, you know, the expertise with you in that time period. And then the scholarship for CIS, California Institute of Integral Studies, CIIS, on Mission Street in San Francisco. If you want to get your bachelor's, you can go there, and you can actually get $10,000 scholarship if you're formerly incarcerated. And like I said, you get your bachelor's in 1 year. They go to school Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And they don't even go to school every week. Out of the month. Like 1 month, you might go 2 weekends. 1 month, you might only go 1 weekend. People fly as far as New York and L.A. to go to that school. And they don't – and if you don't like algebra – no, if you don't like statistics, that's the perfect school. They don't do math there. They do stuff like – it's something called fractals. Fractals is a form, some type of math where say if you braid, like, you know how you braid hair, cornrow, you keep braiding and braiding and braiding. Each set of braids, when you braid, that's a fractal. That's part of what they teach. They don't teach statistics and timetables and stuff like that. It's a hippie school, you know, and I really have fun at that school. But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Okay. My next question here is right. I see that you're involved in a publication called Getting Out of Staying Out, right? Tell a little about the publication and what's the primary focus of the publication.
Oh, Getting In. That was a program that we did to help people navigate, like, know where all the reentry programs are at, where the unemployment offices are at, anything that they needed to know coming out, it was all in that. And it just helped you, it just gives you, you know, places to go and things to do to keep you from you know, going back to the hood trying to make that fast money, which we all know, you know, it ain't good. It bring you right back, you know? Man, I can't get this in.
True indeed, brother. It's an epidemic, man, in regards to the criminal mentality, right? My next question here, right? When you hear the name George Jackson, what does the name George Jackson mean to you when you hear that name?
When I hear that name, and it means struggle. It means Black August. It means birthdays. It means it means a lot, bro. It means somebody that didn't even have a life sentence that was for the people by any means. And he didn't. A lot of people talk about it, but he actually demonstrated it. And I never seen it done like that. I didn't see it, but I read and I know the history. I was there. So, yeah.
You mentioned Black August. What does it mean to you? You ever involved with Black August? You participated or what?
Yeah, in San Quentin, I was introduced to it. In I was in AC. I was in the Justice Center. I was in AC, and we all had went to the store and put in, I think we put in, like, everybody put in $5 worth of stuff. And, you know, we had, like, a method. We do burpees, pull-ups. Some brothers wrote essays, poetry. It was like a whole month of just exercising, competitions. But everybody got something. But it was just like a whole lot of unity, you know, fasting, not eating. It was a lot. I was young, too.
Culture resistance.
Huh?
Culture resistance. You know, I say it was a culture of resistance. You know, culture of resistance.
Yeah.
The Black martyrs and the freedom fighters who died for our sacrifice, like Conrad George. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. W.L. Nolan, like Katrina God and other individuals, right? You know, I like to thank you for coming to our platform and show your knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. I want to thank the work. Thank you for the work that you're doing. The work you're going to continue to do in the future. You know, I commend you for reaching out to our youth in regards to educating, uplifting them, and being an addition and trying from their criminal mentality to their revolution mentality and making them think positive. You know, I'm open the line for a couple of callers, right quick, for a couple of questions, right?
Okay.
562-212, your line is open. You have a question coming for the guest? 562-212,
yes,
your line is open.
Yes, hi. It's Sakari.
Go ahead, Sakari.
Yes, okay. Go ahead. Okay, cool. I hear you working in L.A. and the Bay Area. I'm from both. Down in L.A., I think you've done some work in Skid Row with Pete White at the L.A. Community Action Network.
Yeah.
And I you mentioned a warden that you work with, the brother. Was he the minister as well?
No. He was just a Well, I don't know. I don't think he was.
There was one that was a minister. Yeah, he was a warden back in
the... Yeah, he was in Solidar?
I'm not sure where he was, but he may have been. I just met him at one of the church congregation things, and they told me that he was a minister. We sat down to eat, and we just talked over stuff, and I had mentioned my involvement with the prison. My husband was Qatari, he called him, one of the first persons that they started the Black August. He died August 1st in 70.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Yes, he was. Him and Ugo were very close.
Yeah.
So I worked on San Quentin's sixth case, and I came in and out of prison. I know Siddiqui as well. The work you do, you were definitely talking about the trauma. Have you had any relations with any of the psychology? Because the very event that you're planning to take them through, you know, like from Alabama, to Ghana, that was the very beginning of the trauma. Well, not quite, but those were some of the main areas of trauma. So it's been like centuries of trauma And that's growing up in our DNA that makes us susceptible to a lot of things. That and also the psychology behind the prison. So anyway, I'm excited to hear about how you, especially working with Danny Glover and Cara Belafonte. Those are some long on the road warriors.
Oh yeah, so I'm also in Harry Belafonte has a movie called Sing Your Song. I'm part of his. I'm in that movie. He actually came inside and filmed with me. I'm in his movie, Sing Your Song. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. I'm just glad that you have that understanding of that the brothers inside, you know, even political as they are, if they can get out of SHU, is they do have to get involved in something to get them ready to be out. They have to focus on getting out.
Yeah, you can't wait till you get out. You got to be proactive inside as well. And that's another thing that does, when formerly incarcerated persons like myself go back in, that's what gives them hope, motivation, and want to come out here and do what we're doing as well.
Yeah. Qatari did the university extension programs too. He did it with the California University. And so he wrote and passed a lot of classes. I was amazed that he could do that all in maximum security.
Oh yeah. Oh.
But I'm glad to hear you carried on.
Oh yeah, I carried on.
And
I'm
the fact that you can get into so many prisons.
Yeah, and I'm trying to brothers back inside that want to go, because I just applied for. 8 more. I can't do them all, so I'm gonna be able to actually subcontract with other people that want to go back inside and share and do the same work.
That sounds fantastic. I'm not gonna take up because I'm sure there are a lot of people trying to wanting to ask questions too. I appreciate you responding, and I'll definitely look you up. I'm in Alabama now.
Wait, what part of Alabama? You from Alabama?
I was born in Birmingham. I was raised in Jemison, which is in between Birmingham and Montgomery. But I've been in California since I was 9. I'm here now.
My family is from Baymanette and Mobile.
Okay, down near the water.
Yeah the Gulf.
Okay.
The Gulf.
Down near the beaches. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure that I stay in contact with you. I think I've heard Pete and them talk about you guys a lot.
Yeah. Okay, well, it was nice talking to you.
Likewise, I'm Sukari.
All right.
Okay. You got anything else, Mama? Just it.
I thought you might have had some more people on the line. I wanted to get as much as we can from this young scholar.
Okay. I'm gonna open a couple more lines up right quick. I appreciate it, Mama. Okay. One, your line is open. You have a question coming for the Gary P. before this time. One.
I yield to the mama that was just communicating, because I really am enjoying that interaction between them. So I yield. This is Elder Mama Condi.
Okay, sister.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, there was so much you talked about. The one thing about the guys that were being caught in different methods. I know at UC Berkeley, one of my first classes was criminology. trying to get ready for political science. And in criminology, there were a lot of, I thought, guards, but there might have been mainly, what you call it, maybe prison administrators.
Yeah.
So have you guys ever dealt into the beginning and the concept of prison?
No, not actually. We haven't researched beginning.
Well, actually, in criminology, they set it up, and they tell you what even happened when they developed the isolation ward, which is now the security of the SHU. What happened when they first introduced it? Yeah.
That after being but a lot of that stuff is like the experiments that they did on us,
exactly.
They used against us. Yeah. And they still do it. They still, because like right now they got some radical Muslims. They're not radical. Just
FOI.
The board don't like the way they talk, right? And that's wrong. And then they go and set them up, like they'll put somebody in their cell and say they said things that they didn't say, and that's a confidential form. That's a confidential chronicle that goes in their file. And then when they go to the board, they're asked about that, and they don't know nothing about it because, you know, the goon squad or whoever is orchestrating. You know, if they really want to set you up, they can really do that. Don't be fooled that they just change and they just let everybody go. No, there's still some stuff going on. We play the game, they play the game. You know what I'm saying? But the main thing is get the brothers out of there. Get them all out. Shut the whole prison down. That's what we do. We're going to close 2 prisons down this year.
Good.
This year. And I'm going to be the first one in with my shovel or whatever it takes to knock it down. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Incredible. I felt that way about them since my first introduction. I thought they were horrible places.
Exactly. They are.
No. Yeah, I got introduced to San Quentin when Rochelle was housed there. That was right after George had been assassinated.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, they used to hold court inside San Quentin.
Yeah.
That's when
you didn't
have any citizenship. They take away your citizenship. A lot of people don't understand that when you go to prison.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No rights. But it's like the brother said when he first came on, before we came on air.
Yes.
It's still written in the Constitution that they can still have slaves, and that's what they are. Prisoners.
That's it.
Still be housed and work for the rest of their lives and pay cents, not dollars. Well, they pay a dollar, but that's still.
It used to be 12 cents.
Slave wages. Yeah, that's still slave wages. So
yes, it is.
I would like to fight to get people inside at least minimum wage. You know what I mean? Because a lot of brothers go in with child support, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
They go in. And it don't stop. At least stop it when they go in. But when they go home, they got more money before they went in there. So that's the reason why they don't want to work and go on records so the money be taken from them.
Right.
But what if we used to pay all these guys minimum wage and have it set up where a portion of it goes straight to the child support? You know, they have the money. You use it for other things. You exploit the wages and have everybody in there work for cents and don't pay them. Yeah, it needs to be minimum wage, you know.
I know in California they make just about everything for each state building. They build all the license plates.
All the school desks, all the license plates.
Government buildings.
The clothes we wear. Exactly, made by us. I can be a firefighter in the forest, but I can't be a fireman in my own city because I got a
record.
No,
you could die.
Right?
You can die fighting fires and not get, But, that was one of the things in the 13th Amendment that you said. And the 13th Amendment not only freed the slaves, but it made the condition that unless you went to prison, and then they created prisons, so that that 13th Amendment also, that would be the only way you would be considered a slave, is to be imprisoned.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're definitely a PhD. You came out well.
Yeah.
And you came home.
You know what? Let me say that. I don't mean to change that what you said, but I want to tell everybody that's listening. I don't have a PhD. I have a PhD. I'm gonna say that one more time. I don't have a PhD. What the people want me, I have a PhD because I'm actually doing the work. You know, that paper
sounds like
means
the right
to me.
One.
Exactly,
like
a PhD. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, sister. Thank you, sister.
PhD.
PhD. Kim Carter taught me that.
That's
Carter.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You exposed a lot about the ACL. You.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a time with them, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know their politics now, what they do. I just know the past. And I don't know. They might have changed a lot of things, but back then, no, they wasn't for us, really. You know?
No, well, there had been a lot of things that happened. In the course of them helping prisoners, So there were some detrimental things that had happened. But basically, you know, they came under attack, and they became just as, what, they just became this institutionalized as any other part of that system. But you are definitely reforming. You are definitely in reforming mode, and I that's incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah, we grew up each one teach one.
Yeah, each one teach one. That's right. Can't stop, won't stop.
That's it.
Yeah, pick them up, put them down. Yeah, it's a struggle.
And I used to hate to say it continues, but we develop.
Yeah.
And you're part of that development. You're part of that greater development.
Yeah, exactly. I'm part of it, but a lot of people, you know, help me get to where I'm at. And it's not just me. It's a team of us. You know, it's not just me.
Yes.
But I'm grateful for all, like I said, all the brothers that was support me when I was a kid and believed in me and shared and really embraced me, put me up under their wings, and you know, gave me what I needed to survive. You know, I learned how to read and write in there. I didn't
Yeah. Yeah, that's phenomenal, because they really believe in reading and that physical workout, especially the way you talked about how everybody went they would pull things.
Yeah, because you got the thing on your call. Just go to the car. Yeah,
you sound like you're home finally out of traffic.
Oh, I was just trying to get in my gated community. I didn't have my key. Now I'm going through the gate.
Gotcha.
I'm actually in L.A. right now on my way back up that way because I had to pick up some people from the county jails. I pick up people from prisons, which I don't have a problem, but I'm kind of getting leery of these county jails. They're asking me to pick up people, and that wasn't written in the contract, but I'm doing it anyway. But they're giving me people that's sick, and I'm like, wait a minute, y'all not telling me who I'm riding with.
That's right.
So I'm not gonna do no more county jail pickups. I'm gonna just do the prisons, which I know. But that's the reason I'm down here right now. But yeah, I've been picking people up from prisons, jails,
right,
passing out masses,
wow,
giving away stuff for kids over in Emeryville at the park,
cool,
right there by Lois the Pie Queen, that little park.
Oh yeah,
right,
yeah,
there,
man.
Yeah, we're gonna start giving away food over there, and you know, because that was one of the first places I went when I first came home, and I remember there was a sister there passing out food, and she gave me a plate, and I had never had no soul food since I was out,
right?
And she gave me a plate, and I started crying. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I've been gone 32 years." She's like, "Where you been at?" And I had to tell her my whole story. And she said,
right,
"Well, when you see me passing out plates, you come get a free plate anytime."
Yep. Lois the Pie Queen, her daughter is Tremaine Hawkins, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's who I met when I first went there. He gave me a free meal, free coming home.
Yeah,
meal.
Tremaine and I, we went to school together. Tremaine, that her husband was Edwin Hawkins.
Yeah.
And her son, I forget his name, he and my son went to school together.
Yeah, I met him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, musician. Yeah, but yeah, Lois the Pie Queen. I went to Berkeley High School with her daughter. We used to, that was the place where you got your pie. And everything else good.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that you're doing these college programs and introducing and more people to bigger claims on their lives.
Yeah.
With their mind focused on the community.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm watching the time because I enjoy what you shared. I think you opened up quite a bit. There are a lot of organizations that the brothers are still inside forming that could really probably benefit from what your guidelines are setting up.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, I want to yield because I'd really like to hear more that you'd have to say for this program. We have 7 minutes, Brother Valani.
We got 7 minutes. You know, about time for the brother to give out. Like, if I'm gonna call, we got like 7 minutes.
Okay,
you can go ahead, brother. Get your final thoughts, brother.
Huh?
I said you can go ahead and get your final thoughts, brother. You got like 5 minutes. Man.
Oh. Okay. I'm in transition back to LA. It's been a great journey. Like I said, this is like living a dream to me. I'm just doing the work that I guess I can say I'm blessed. I'm blessed to do the work. I'm blessed to be living the life I'm living. I'm blessed not to be the person I was before I went in there, and I'm out here doing the work. And anybody that wants to help, volunteer, again, you can reach me at choicesforfreedom.org, or basically a lot of people in the Bay know who I am. If you say Nate Williams, they probably would give you my phone number on my card. I've been doing this work for I've been home 7 years, almost 8 years. But this work been just to start out here. It started inside, like I said, with brothers that laced me. And then I was able to do my own thing. The Estimated Hit Committee, I was able to meet so many people. And that's what this is all about. It's about networking. Like this what you're doing right here, bro, this is networking. Because people can hear and they could find information and read and learn more and become part of the struggle, whatever they can do, whatever you can contribute. You know, we can't just save the world, but if you can just save yourself and prevent yourself, that's doing a lot. A lot of us think that we're out here to save the world. We can't do that. That's impossible. But you can do yourself. You can save yourself. You can correct yourself. And that's a part of doing your part, even if you can't volunteer. As long as you're doing what's right, you know, we all can benefit from that. I just don't like these police out here and the stuff they're doing to our kids. That's another subject we can talk about another day. Again, I'm just out here. If anybody need anybody to talk to, kids or need anybody to talk to somebody coming home on resources, on a direction they need to go, just hit me up. Call me. SocialFreedom.org, Nate Williams.
Indeed, brother. I appreciate you coming to our show, sharing out to understand that to me and your work.
Yeah.
I thank you, brother. I forgot to mention earlier that we actually had one of our political prisoner, Bobby Jaleel Moody King, who has contracted COVID-19, and he is hospitalized. The brother had been incarcerated in 1971, you know, almost 50 years. You know, the brother need our support. He need to try to push to get the brother out, release him, because he's an elderly. He don't put the struggling about the liberation. He wrote books like We Are All Liberators. He been constantly educating himself. He done received degrees in prison. You know, it's just time for the brother to come on. Then the brother's sick, you know. Then, you know, we got a lot of elderly political prisoners that are sick, such as E-Man Jamil Lamine, Bob Russell Maroon Schultz, the elder Mameen Kabir, you know, Dr. Matula Shakur. The list goes on and on. These brothers need our support, right? There's a lot of petition floating around online. In regards to E-Man Jamil Lamine, Dr. Matuba Shakur, you know, a lot of websites such as Jericho Amnesty, Not to Be a Political Prisoner Coalition, learn more about these political prisoners. As a writer, reach out to them, reach out to the prison, put your pressure down, and just support our freedom fighters. As well as all the freedom fighters in the West Coast from the shoe line, like Adi Olugba Shakur, the Elder Satawa, Joe Kushima, Patiero, the list goes on and on, right? You know, if you have any loved one associates that are incarcerated behind enemy lines, if you're looking to our website, which is www.jordanuniversity.com. Again, it's www.jordanuniversity.com. Long live New African Indian Movement, long live resistance, free land.
To independence now. Tomorrow.
Yeah, they say those who do not move do not feel their chains, but the African people aware of their pain, aware of the game, invader deception, black presidents who are white man extensions, people from Cape to Cairo rebel, cause fake independence and ongoing hell, colonial ties still keep them chained, the richest continents getting robbed again, the IMF and World Bank criminal schemes, what about reparations to me it seems that every metropole from Amsterdam to Paris and Brussels was built with the hands of African labor, a slave relation, developing Europe at expense of the nation. But Africans rebelled from the first conquest till flag independence at last accomplished.
Il y en a qui demandent la vie de tout l'impérialisme. L'impérialisme, regardez dans vos assiettes quand vous mangez les grains de riz, de maïs, de mil importés. C'est ça l'impérialisme. N'allez pas plus loin.
Yeah. Hey yo, the spirit of Lumumba lives on in Congo, like Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, Samora Michelle, it was Viva Frelimo, but Mozambique still fighting for freedom. Why did these three who dare to invent the future then clash to the fullest extent with the colonizers? If we open eyes, if we can see the rich whites, we're scared of rising African power, real independence, a people's politics, anti-capitalism. So they stifle their growth in every way, so that South Africa looks colonized today. For any flaws of Mugabe, that ain't what they hate. Zimbabwe's not a colony, make no mistake. Look at AFRICOM, the African command. That's the US and a puppet shaking each other's hands. Divide and conquer is a hell of a tactic. They blame Africa for relations that backward. The whole basis was plundered from outside Rwanda, Uganda. The Sudan's divides, pushing forward war for precious coal sand. So cell phones and PCs are sold in lands where people don't know how they were constructed. Your Windows now functions from a child's destruction.